Hi, everyone. Welcome to Teaching Matters. You know, one of the things as an educator that we always hope for is to think about that when our students graduate, whether that's from a K-12 setting or higher education, as is the case for me, that they go out and they become productive members of society. And in order for them to be able to do that, one of the key skills that they have to learn is really how to consume, process, and respond to information. That's a challenge. And one of the things that we have to figure out how to do as educators at any level is to help students do that task. Reading is one of the most fundamental skills in being able to accumulate information and knowledge and be able to respond and react to it. And unfortunately, we have a lot of work to do as a nation in order to bring the reading comprehension level up of the students that are in our classroom. That's the issue we'll be talking about in today's Teaching Matters.
Welcome to Teaching Matters, a podcast exploring all things teaching and learning. Teaching Matters is produced by NPR affiliate WOUV Public Media in Athens, Ohio. And here is your host, Dr. Scott Titsworth, Dean of the Scripps College of Communication at Ohio University.
Thank you, Trinity. I appreciate that. Joining me today is Rebecca Kochler. She's the Executive Director of Reading Reimagined. Reading Reimagined is a program that is a part of the Advanced Education Research and Development Fund, or ARDEF, a national nonprofit dedicated to unlocking scientific breakthroughs to solve teaching and learning challenges in PK-12 settings. If you're a listener of the podcast, you've probably been exposed to a couple other guests who are also with ARDEF. We learned about Math EF Plus program, as well as Assessment for Good in previous episodes in this year's season. Rebecca joined ARDEF after a highly successful career in Louisiana, where she served as the Assistant Superintendent of Academics in the Louisiana Department of Education and now directs the Reading Reimagined program. Rebecca, thank you so much for your time and being on the program.
Yeah, thank you for having me. So happy to be here.
Absolutely. So maybe if we could start, I mean, you're obviously a program director for a very specific program in ARDEF. Mm-hmm. What got you into being interested in the topic of reading? I mean, why is this sort of your North Star right now?
Yeah, two reasons. First, I actually got into education because my brother learned to read as a freshman in high school. He struggled his entire time in school. Mm-hmm. And my mom could not figure out what to do and how to get him the help he needed. So she put herself through college and while she was raising us and became a teacher at a private school in hopes that we could go there for free. And that would help because everything else she was trying to do was not working. And it did work. We went to, ended up going to a very good private school. My brother ended up getting a great reading tutor and he remembers the experience of learning to decode, you know, put sounds to letters, like the most basic first step in learning to read as a freshman in high school. And he got lucky. He graduated, went on to college, became a special education teacher himself, was a principal and now coaches principals. But I had a realization in college that the reason I was there was because of a lot of sacrifice from my mom. And so wanted to figure out like, why were our schools not delivering on the most core principle of teaching kids to read, which is like the most basic promise we make to families when we take them into our public education systems. Mm-hmm. So I taught middle school reading and history in Newark, New Jersey, coached principals and teachers, went to Louisiana, and focused a lot on systems. How do our public systems help, again, deliver on this promise? And we made a lot of progress in Louisiana, which I'm very proud of, and we really most struggled with middle school reading. We just could not see growth in middle school reading, and the things we were doing in other grades were not translating. And so I felt very frustrated by the marketplace and the research. I felt like we weren't getting clear answers on what to do, and we definitely were not getting good tools to solve our problems. So started this work to better understand why do kids struggle so much mm-hmm. after fourth grade? What do we do about it? And how do we build better tools to help educators and most importantly, kids?
Thanks for sharing the personal story. I think that that personal connection is obviously something that's really important for you. And oftentimes we find ourselves drawn to areas of specialization in some ways mm-hmm. in our professional careers because of personal experiences like that. Interesting, before we sort of turn to the specifics of your program, the point that you brought up about you really wanting to focus on that middle school age group is interesting because we hear, you know, if you talk to people in the sciences or in the STEM fields other than the hard sciences, there's a very similar refrain that students will have interest in some degree of talent by the time they get through the elementary grade stages. And then oftentimes they reach sort of those middle grade stages and they hit a wall and completely, yeah. I mean, as an experienced middle school teacher, by the way, my daughter also teaches middle school. So I hear these stories all the time, yeah. and she loves it. What is it about that age group where students academically sort of reach some sort of a threshold that can go very positive or can really, you know, in some cases regress for them?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what we see in reading. So I think there are lots of social things happening to kids, certainly, and developmental things happening, but there's actually what we're finding is very specific things happening mm-hmm. in reading that affect students and things we haven't researched enough and actually learned enough about. So there is this sense, I think, that we know all the things about how to teach kids to read, the science of reading movement, which is very important and very mm-hmm. powerful, sort of suggests that the research is done. We know this stuff. We just have to do it. And if we just do the things we know in research, our kids will be okay. So it's a sort of scale and training issue. And I certainly believe we need to do a lot of things differently at a larger scale in kindergarten through second grade. But I think what we're finding in our research is that around fourth grade, students who showed that they were reading just fine and actually did get a good foundation do start to show what almost looks like a regression. It's not actually a regression, but it looks like a regression. Skills that they seem to be able to do when they were younger, like decode and mm-hmm. put sounds to words, to form words, stop being able to do that around fourth and fifth grade. And that was really, again, particularly curious, because the thing I kept hearing from folks when I said, why is this happening, was one, we need to do better in kindergarten through second grade, which I agree we do. Two, it's a vocabulary issue, which certainly vocabulary is very critical. And three, it's a background knowledge issue, also very important. But I wasn't convinced that was the whole story, because mm-hmm. I was seeing kids, again, who had done well. We were doing vocabulary work, we were doing background knowledge work, and they still were running into these walls around fourth and fifth grade. That is what our research has focused on. And if you look at any state assessment, any national assessment, NAEP shows this too, our eighth graders perform worse than our fourth graders do as a country. And we see lots of growth. Louisiana and Mississippi are examples of lots of fourth grade reading growth. Almost no growth on our eighth grade NAEP results as a country, and same in states that are showing lots of promise in early grades. So there's something unique happening, and our research would suggest there's a set of things we're learning that we haven't known enough about, and we're not teaching appropriately as kids grow through the grades.
A couple of questions to follow up on that. So when you talk about, you know, reading skill and reading effectiveness, I think sometimes people, you know, will oversimplify things like that and say it's a quantity or a quality issue. In other words, mm-hmm. The students are not reading enough, or they're not reading with precision. It's really both, right? I mean, it's really that a student needs to be able to do it well and have some repetition, right?
Yes, it's definitely both things. And there are really specific skills. So I think this is the other thing, that exposure leads to improvements in reading. Either you just need to be read to a ton when you're younger, and again, when you're older, you just need to read a lot. You do need to be read to, and you do need to read a lot, yes. And that doesn't teach you to read. So mm-hmm. we know, again, in research, you actually have to build specific neural pathways in your brain to be able to read. We are pre-programmed from the moment we come out to learn to speak, and our brain automatically builds neural pathways to speak. Our brain is not pre-programmed to read. We have to teach it to read, and we actually have to build those neural pathways. The way you do that is learning a new skill and practicing that skill over and over. Exposure does not build a neural pathway. And mm-hmm. so this is where there's an explicitness of learning to read, which is what a lot of the focus in kindergarten through second grade has been on, this explicitness of teaching decoding and phonemic awareness, this, mm-hmm. these sort of hard skills of the patterns of reading and of language. And what we're finding is that there's more of that to do that happens past second grade, that is more advanced on the code of learning to read English, that we basically stop doing. And we have this belief that you learn to read and then you read to learn. And our research is really pointing to the idea that that saying is very flawed and leads us to a lot of misconceptions around what students need. And almost this feeling that if you're above third and fourth grade and you're still learning components of the code, you're a struggling reader. And what our research is showing is that about 50 to 60% of kids need ongoing work with the code. It's just a different set of work that we have not previously focused on and done with kids.
Is the difference in code because as you grow older, you're exposed to different types of text? Is that sort of the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, and mostly different types of words. And the English language is really complicated, particularly as words get more complex. So the example we use is cat. And cat is a word that most of our kids can decode by the time they leave second grade, putting the sounds, you know, cat together. Cat, those three letters, C-A-T, turn at some point in some words to the sound cache. C-A-T makes a cache sound. Why would the letter C-A-T, when put together to sound cat, all hard sounds, turn into cache? Well, it shows up in the middle of education, right? Cache. So what happens when you start to decode education, if you've learned the foundations, but you haven't learned the complexity of multisyllabic decoding, which there's a lot of different skill and a lot of different patterns that show up in multisyllabic decoding, which shows up around fourth and fifth grade, we'll see kids decode education as educat or catian. And they're applying their skills from younger into this more complex word structure. It doesn't trigger for them that they know that word. And sometimes we'll think, oh, it's a vocabulary issue. Well, most fifth graders know the word education means. It's just truly a multisyllabic decoding issue. And it's not basic decoding like phonemic awareness, just letter sound association and blending. It becomes more like morphology, the way words change and structures change. Exactly. So there becomes this more complex set of skills that we basically don't teach anywhere in our progressions that is critical for kids to transfer from single syllable word decoding into multisyllabic word decoding. And that drops off around fourth and fifth grade when we basically stop teaching decoding altogether. And that's where we see kids struggle in a set of research I can talk more about called the decoding threshold, suggests that about 40 to 50% of our middle schoolers cannot decode at a level that allows them any access to reading comprehension. That's a huge number. And it's because it's not the ability to decode cat, it's the ability to decode education. And that's really what's holding back so many of our readers.
Yeah, interesting. I do want to turn to decoding threshold, but I've got one more question before we do that. More out of personal interest, I guess, than anything else. But as students, you know, one of the things that I think about as an educator and that I do research on is issues related to motivation and affect towards learning and those sorts of things. I think about my own experiences growing up with some mild dyslexia through most of elementary school. I became an avid reader, however, and it started at a very early age with literally Peanuts comic books, you know. But then my brother, who is older than I was, transitioned me into science fiction. So reading like Robert Heinlein and authors like that, probably well before I should have been doing that in some cases. The question that I have is, as students are becoming more proficient at reading, are there certain things that, based upon your experiences as a teacher or in a new role as a research program director, that sort of pull them from a motivational state into becoming more proficient? So in other words, do narrative books draw them in more quickly than expository, you know, prose and that sort of thing?
Yeah, sometimes there's this, I think, thing that we say a lot with reading, which is like students just need choice. Like if they could read choice, if they had choice, they'd be more interested in text and they would read more. I certainly think that's true. I think there's not evidence that students generally prefer narrative or not. I think lots of kids have lots of different interests and kids are just drawn to different things. And I think kids should have some choice in what they read. And kids like to succeed. And we in Louisiana, when we wrote our reading curriculum, we actually did a survey with kids across the state to see what books and topics were they interested in learning about. They were interested in all kinds of things. They were interested in Shakespeare. Like, they all wanted to read Romeo and Juliet. They were interested in topics that I, as a grown-up, was not as much interested in, you know, like the ethics of technology and things that I just don't think about, but they do every single day because it impacts them. And they wanted to read about the things we always think about, you know, sports and, you know, teen love and other things that they're interested in, right? Kids love all different things. And the reality is kids have to be able to read a whole bunch of stuff too to succeed in the world. And so that's what we think a lot about. I think motivation is such an important thing. And part of what's so hard as you look at older students is they've had so many bad experiences being able to read, and so many computer programs, intervention teachers, other teachers attempting so many strategies, and they haven't worked. It hasn't translated for them. And that is the thing students most get tired of. Like, okay, I've been doing this stuff and it's not working, and I'm not getting better at this, and I'm embarrassed to show up to class and not be able to perform with my peers. And, you know, that's kind of paired with a lot of our research, which is showing even the most fundamental basic skills for older kids need to be applied in the context of mature text. And so really thinking about how we bring and help students access mature and meaningful text, no matter where their skill proficiencies are. And that's, we focused a lot of research on that. What are the skills we should be doing with students, and how do we apply them in the context of more mature text? Because most kids are interested in a whole variety of things if they can actually do it and access it and see success.
Earlier, when you were sort of talking about the scale of the need for improving literacy and effectiveness of students' reading capabilities in sort of that middle school age range, before we started recording, you mentioned the phrase decoding threshold, and then you brought it up just a few minutes ago. You want to go ahead and define what that is for the audience and maybe contextualize for them why that's such an important concept in this discussion of where we need students to progress?
Yeah, for sure. So some really important research came out in 2019 that my team and I were very compelled by. So a set of research out of ETS, it was a very large study, very well done, with an assessment, CAPTIA Read Basics. That was a different kind of assessment, looking at a larger variety of skills for students and older students. So they looked at 5th through 10th graders. And what they basically found was, in a very, very large sample where they followed students over a couple of years, students who fell below a specific decoding ability, which was just a performance ability, a specific score on their assessments, would never, ever show reading comprehension growth, no matter the interventions attempted, like no ability to comprehend text at all. And then once they got over that threshold, there was a direct connection between improved comprehension with improved decoding. So it wasn't just this like switch, right? You learn to read and you read to learn sort of thing, right? It was like, oh, you have to get over this threshold to even access comprehension ability at all. And then improvements in decoding help support improvements in comprehension. It's not the only thing you need to comprehend. You do need vocabulary and other things, but there was a direct ongoing correlation even after you got above the threshold. Those two things were super interesting, and that threshold was identical for a fifth grader and a 10th grader.
Wow.
That was very compelling to us. And I think in some ways maybe intuitive, right? The science of reading work that we've all been talking about for the last 5 years, so much about that, but focused on younger kids. And so, yes, of course, you have to decode cat to be able to comprehend. But what was so interesting, we were doing some additional research with Stanford, was we started to think, you know, I was thinking about Louisiana when I was there. If you had asked me what percentage of middle schoolers like can't decode such that they cannot do any comprehension work, I probably would have said somewhere in the like 7 to 10% range, that group that we think about for more intensive intervention. And yet we know 40% of kids are getting the lowest score on most of our state assessments. You know, only 60% of kids can't read on grade level in middle school. I would have said, oh, it's more comprehension stuff happening there. We actually think that number is about 40% of middle schoolers who fall below that decoding threshold. And the reason for that is because, again, it's this shift from looking at single syllable word decoding to multisyllabic word decoding. We then funded a follow-on study with ETS and Stanford that was also creating a similar assessment. We found the exact same effect in both of those follow-on studies, and starting to better understand, like, what's the dynamic of this threshold? Again, what's the percentage of students we think really struggling with complex decoding past third grade? And that's where we start to just believe there's this set of skills that kids need in regular tier one instruction, ongoing. It's actually not a struggling reader's issue. It's an every kid issue, which is morphology, fluency, applied spelling and vocabulary work that most kids need to continue reading success up into middle school to stay above that decoding threshold and continue improvement in reading.
That's interesting, because the way you describe that, I'm going to put words in your mouth, so definitely correct that. It sounds like the way that we're generally speaking teaching students to become readers, we get them to a certain threshold, but unfortunately we don't let them stay over that hump. It's a developmental issue almost, it sounds like, the way you're describing it, that move from single to multi, like we're not catching up with that as they're progressing.
Exactly. That's where this phrase of, we teach kids to read in kindergarten, first and second grade, and then they've like magically learned the code. And so now we just like do reading comprehension. Now they're just reading to learn in third grade and above. That is a very flawed statement. And it leads us to this approach that, oh, if you can't read in third grade, if you can't do complex decoding, you can't decode education, you're a struggling reader. And actually what our research is showing is most kids, that's a morphology issue more than it's a basic phonemic awareness issue, right? And morphology, we don't do much of morphology in first, second grade with kids. That is the set of work we should start doing we should start doing more of it in second grade, actually. But we should really do a lot of it in third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade with students. As language changes, vocabulary becomes more sophisticated, kids are reading more complex text. We should be doing that in the context of fluency work and syntax work with students as they get older. And we should be doing that for really all kids. And yet we see this as an intervention sort of work or a struggling reader's work. And that's the thing we're really trying to shift, is that these are just core reading practices that most kids need as language and sentence structure becomes more complex in reading.
And, you know, anecdotally, you know, being around this age group, because of my daughter, and, you know, she's actually, you know, I mean, she's a new teacher, so she was in this age group not that long ago. You notice students who are talking in more complex words and saying correctly. So, like, everything that you're saying about this threshold resonates with me as I think about the children that I've been around. And, you know, in a university town, you always think, well, you know, there's a bunch of kids running around that have professors as parents, you know, and they grow up in a different language environment as a result of that, both verbally and very likely also reading. I think that's really fascinating. So, you know, at the core of what you do in your role as the executive director of Reading Reimagined, you're trying to figure out how to solve this problem through funded projects. What are some of the streams that, you know, you have people doing research on to try to figure out, you know, how to overcome this?
Yeah, I'm a practitioner by trade, so I'm very practical. I'm just trying to let, you know, I'm kind of solving the problems I wish I had better answers to when I was in Louisiana or in the classroom and I was struggling and didn't feel like I was getting good answers on what to do. We fund three major buckets of work: define, assess, and measure, or intervene. I'm sorry. Define, measure, and intervene. Sorry. And so what we're trying to do is, one, really define clearly the challenge that students are having after third grade in learning to read, which is a lot of the work, again, to deeply understand the decoding threshold. We've funded, again, follow-on studies with Stanford and ETS, and then really looking at those data sets to try to understand the nature of that threshold, but really trying to understand the problem more clearly. Then assess. Most of our assessments don't actually look for this set of things. We have assessments built for younger kids to look for the foundational reading sequence. And then we have reading comprehension assessments as kids get older. We tend to take assessments built for younger kids to look for, you know, those quote unquote really struggling students. again, when you have an assessment that was built to look for multisyllabic or single syllable word decoding, you'll only find about 5 to 7% of older kids who show decoding needs. But again, we think it's about 40%. You need an assessment built to look for multisyllabic word decoding, to look for things like morphology and fluency, and applied spelling and vocabulary work. So we have funded, we've partnered with Stanford, funded the build out of the ROAR assessment to be a more complex way to look at reading, a more age appropriate way that follows students kindergarten through 12th grade, and then intervene. How do we support students? What should we actually be doing differently? What do we do differently in kindergarten through second grade? But what do we do differently as kids grow as well? And so we have funded work with university partnerships, SUNY Albany and University of Tennessee, University of California, Irvine, and NWEA, a host of others, to really get clear on strategies that are age appropriate and connected to meaningful grade level text, but take on these more complex components of learning to read and more complex decoding. And now we're working to build that into a more integrated framework. And what we're really finding is that no individual student has one need. In fact, we see combinations of skills come together differently for different kids. And so trying to understand the profiles of students that show up as they grow older and what combinations tend to interact the most together so we can think more in a more connected way about the kind of intervention support or book access support kids need.
Interesting. So I know I know that your program is still relatively young, but have you started to see outcomes that, you know, as the practitioner heart that you have, you're starting to get excited about other teachers knowing about?
Yeah, a lot of our, I mean, again, some of our research partners have seen really promising outcomes with some of their strategies. NWA has built a fluency protocol. These resources are available open source on our site. University of SUNY Albany has built a really also interesting integrated fluency protocol, again, integrated into grade level text, but for readers on the sort of, you know, who are needing a lot of this ongoing decoding work. At University of Tennessee is building out some really interesting instructional strategies around multisyllabic decoding work and morphology work in the context of grade level text. So those resources, again, are sort of focused. They have shown results and are showing lots of promise, and are materials available now for folks. We've also been trying to figure out what kind of technology is needed to enable a lot of this, because some of this is really complex stuff. I taught middle school reading. I had 150 middle schoolers that I taught. I probably would not have had the ability to figure out the profile of every student in my class, you know, that I taught, get them the right kind of preparation for grade level text. And so what we're trying to do is figure out how can technology enable that so teachers can really focus on the already very hard work of teaching really meaningful and beautiful novels and books to kids and breaking those apart and talking about them. And so we've already started to see a lot of promising efficacy results from some of the technology interventions. And those actually start all the way down in kindergarten to try to push more of this skill so kids are better prepared for that transfer when it comes.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned that in addition to the AirDev programs, we've had a lot of discussions of AI and relatedly data analysis over the course of this season of Teaching Matters. The way that you talk about this notion that a reader, you know, could enter with a certain type of profile, and I'm sure that there needs to be a lot of additional data to be able to really unlock what those profiles are. But of course, each person is unique, but also similar to some other people. You just have to figure out what that secret code is. That, as you mentioned, the technology, and if you're able to track a student starting, you know, in even pre-K settings, but certainly as they enter into kindergarten and going forward, and then by the time they get to third grade, by the time they get to fourth grade, et cetera, that's fascinating to think about. It almost means that you would be in a typical classroom setting, but instruction, particularly in this area, would be almost completely individualized to what your needs are. And I think that's really exciting. So,
Yeah, exactly. And then you can show up and read The Christmas Carol with your peers and talk about it in meaningful ways and really engage because you're prepared to break apart that text and make sense of it. And that's exactly what we're trying to do. The benefit of that is a couple of things. One, you can actually leverage the students' language strengths as well. So we know that different students show up. So dialect patterns, for example, play a lot into profiles because you have natural language patterns that exist. Mm-hmm. And we know that when you apply your language patterns in learning to read, you're going to learn those patterns faster when you learn to read. So I lived in Charleston for a long time. There's lots of local language patterns. Gullah, for example, mm-hmm. does a lot of future tense conjugation in it, the way that the language plays out, not a lot of past tense conjugation. General English is lots of past tense conjugations. Mm-hmm. So future tenses are sometimes more complex, actually. Mm-hmm. And so that's a set of things. When we know that in your profile, we can help leverage that. We can start your decoding work with future tense conjugations. We can leverage those strengths to help you understand what language patterns are happening in kind of English language. That's an example of one thing we can start to do when we understand your profiles, and that will speed up your growth likely because we're leveraging mm-hmm. your linguistic strengths that exist. The other thing we can do is be more efficient. So when we find struggling readers, we tend to give them these long progressions because we don't know what to do. So we just say, well, you have to learn the whole code. So I guess we'll just teach you the whole code. And kind of best case scenario for individualization is plopping you somewhere in the middle of that sequence and moving you through it. It takes so long. And what we find with students is that we almost never catch them up in meaningful ways in reading. And so with a profile approach, there's a ton of stuff in that sequence they probably don't need because they know it. We can actually just hone in a bunch. And what we find in building those neural pathways is that sometimes you need lots and lots of practice, upwards of 60 to 100 at-bats before you build that neural pathway in some parts of the code. But other parts of the code, you might only need 5 to 20 at-bats. You probably don't need 100 at-bats for every single part of it. And that probably has to do with a lot of your own linguistic patterns, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so when we take a struggling reader and we give them 100 at-bats for everything, you basically don't learn everything because it's too slow. And so what we can do now by understanding profiles is give them a lot of practice where they need it and move them more efficiently where they don't need it. And that's so hard to do for an individual teacher in the classroom.
It's really interesting, though, because when you talk about it in that way, and this is going to go, I'm guessing, outside of the data set, and you know, this is a hypothesis that maybe is not yet demonstrated. But if you figure out how to unlock the student's needs from a profile standpoint, my gut instinct as somebody that studies a lot of topics related to education is that it is sort of like a growth curve where when you unlock a few things and you figure a few things out, the ability to pick up subsequent things happens much more quickly. And, you know, it is sort of like an explosion of learning rather than a linear, you know, progression. And I hope that's the case, because I hope that you all figure out the keys, you know, unlocking this, that it really, you know, it really makes a lot of students progress that much more quickly as they go in. I'm going to give you a last opportunity to talk about why this is so important. I mean, that number 40% that you mentioned just really sticks in my mind. And I think, okay, this is a real issue that if we could figure out how to solve it, it would mean that what we've been defining as the status quo, you know, across the country is fundamentally changed. You know, if we solve that problem, you know, this is where you get to pontificate. What happens to education if all of a sudden we figure out how to turn that 40% problem into, you know, what would be in those single digits of students that need much more intensive intervention? But for, you know, the vast majority of our students, you know, 80% or more of them, they get over that threshold. How does education look different by the time they get into high school, by the time they get into college, by the time they're working adults like you and I?
Yeah, I mean, we get to focus on all the other stuff that's so interesting in learning, right? So this is our goal. Our goal is to eradicate illiteracy in our lifetime. Hmm. It is not the whole thing. It will not, like, you know, necessarily change any individual's life path, but we get to focus on all of the other interesting stuff that you want to go to school to learn. learning the code of reading is not the most interesting thing, but it is a necessity to unlock access to so much more interesting stuff in all of the other areas. And so for me, the thing is, like, let's just take off the foundation of reading off the table. Like, let's just ensure every kid gets it, because then what we get to spend time with kids in schools doing is so interesting and so fun. And that is really our goal. Like, help make the majority of school time not about reading intervention and reading support and any of that, but about science and social studies and reading interesting novels and, you know, time for kids to write about how they feel and whatnot. Like, that's what we want school to be. And for so many kids, it's not, just because they cannot access reading. Yeah. And so that really is our hope, is that we just can dramatically change the percentage of kids accessing reading so they can do so much other stuff in school.
Yeah. Rebecca, it's been great to get to know you, and the work that you're doing is so very important. I know that, you know, for myself, for my daughter, I mean, for everyone that I know, when they really unlock their potential, it's because they've learned the skills to be able to consume information. Like, I started out the podcast, and for most people that starts with reading and then becomes more complex, you know, in other ways. But what you're doing is so important, and congratulations on having such a great program to run. So,
yeah, well, we just hope we can make teachers' lives a bit easier and help give them the tools and answers they want and are looking for to serve their kids. And most importantly, hope we can make kids' lives a bit easier and more interesting as well. So thank you for having me. It's great to be on. And I hope, you know, I represent too so much of the work that so many of our partners in research and in classrooms. We have an incredible teacher advisory group that are really teaching us so much about how to solve this problem. So thank you.
Absolutely. And certainly as your program continues to mature and you have more data and results to work with, if you have follow-up stories, don't hesitate to reach out.
We'd love that.
Because, you know, we had a great primer right now. And so let's keep building so other people understand how they can use the information. If you're interested in what Rebecca was talking about today and want to learn more, the link to the Reading Reimagined website from Airdif will be accompanying the text of the podcast. So you can go on there and find out more information about the programs that she was talking about and other resources that, that her team and colleagues have put together. Rebecca is the Executive Director of Reading Reimagined from Airdif. She joined us today to talk about her program, and we're thankful for her time. Thank you for listening to Teaching Matters. If you want to reach out to the podcast, the best way to do that is by email. Just email us at teachingmatterspodcast, all one word, all lowercase, at ohio.edu. That's our email address. You can also direct message us on social media platforms. Thank you all for listening, and we hope that you have a great day.